mind throwing a leg over the ball this quiet.
Oh, he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello, welcome to this special Asian Cup podcast brought to you from the United Arab Emirates. Simon Hill, your host in the chair, alongside ex-Socceroo defender Sasha Ognjenovski, who will be with me in commentary for the group stage of the Asian Cup. Welcome along, Sasha. Good to see you, mate.
Thank you, Simon. Great to be here.
Yeah, we've been here a few days, haven't we? We can't wait for the Asian Cup to start.
Exactly right. We've been here for a while now. We did the Oman-Australia friendly game and looking forward to this great tournament kicking off.
You, of course, before we get on to this year's tournament, you, of course, played for Australia in the 2011 tournament in Qatar, got all the way to the final. What's this competition like to play in?
Well, it's a great competition. It's our continental competition. It's the one that we all want to win. You can get to the Confed's Cup on the back of it. It's a major tournament, and we want to win it. We saw how good it was to win back in Australia 2015, and we're looking to go back to back definitely.
That's a final against Japan.
Thanks for reminding me,
Simon. Just harking on that for a second.
Thanks, Simon.
Obviously, you lost it in extra time, but does that still rankle? And did you keep your runners-up medal?
No, I didn't keep my runners-up medal. I didn't keep any of my runners-up medals that I won, Simon. No, because I don't.
Where did it go?
In the rubbish bin, I'm pretty sure.
No.
In the stadium, yeah.
In the stadium itself?
Yeah. No, I never kept any of my runners-up medals, but yeah, it does rankle because on the day I thought that we were the better team in the final, and we had chances to score and ice the game. We went through the tournament conceding two goals. And we had enough firepower, I felt, in the front third to do damage. And their goalkeeper had a great game.
You had chances, didn't you?
We did have chances, yeah. And their goalkeeper had a great game, but in saying that, we made him look better than what he was, I think.
4 years later, of course, the Socceroos did win it against South Korea in the final. The South Koreans seem to be everybody's hot tip to go one better this time around. Is that the way you see it?
I see it like that because they're the only team in the competition that has a bona fide superstar in Heung-min Son. He's tearing up the EPL as we speak. He played last night in a cup game against Tranmere Rovers, I think it was. I watched him, and every time he gets on the ball, he just looks like something's going to happen. He's such a dangerous player. He can score goals. He gets his teammates involved, and when you have a player like that in your team, he can really inspire the rest of the squad. And I think on the back of what he's producing in England, if he can bring a part of that to this Asian Cup, not only will it be a fantastic tournament to watch him playing, but I think it'll go a long way to South Korea winning this one.
Leaving Australia aside, because we'll talk about the Socceroos in a moment in more detail, but out of all the other teams at this Asian Cup, who do you think might be the Korean's strongest challengers?
Look, I think Iran. Iran are a team that are superbly coached. We know how compact and how defensive they played. If you look at the World Cup, probably the three Asian teams that really stood out in the World Cup were Japan. Obviously now Japan's without Honda and Kagawa and co. So it's a little bit of a different Japanese team. So we don't know what to expect so much from them. They do have some fantastic talent in their team, but I just think that from what I saw in the World Cup, I think that Iran may be the team that the South Koreans will meet in the final. They just set up really well. They defend. They're compact. They play very unlike Asian teams from this part of the world. Superbly coached. He's a great tactician, Carlos Quiroz. And I think that they're the ones that will challenge South Korea.
Do you get the sense of anticipation around the Emirates? Obviously, we're based in Abu Dhabi. It's been played in four centres, Dubai, Sharjah and Al Ain being the other three. Do you feel as though there's a sense of excitement around it or not?
Not so much. I think everyone's just waiting for it to start. There hasn't been, we're in Abu Dhabi here, there hasn't been a whole lot of advertisement around the city. albeit we're in a little bit outside of the main sort of drag in Abu Dhabi, so maybe a bit less out here. But yeah, it doesn't seem to have that real buzz around the city as yet. I think after tonight's after the kickoff tonight, obviously the first game UAE v Bahrain, I think that it'll really start to sort of bubble and start to get some interest. And like us as well, you know, we're sitting in our hotel rooms and you know, looking at players and you know, thinking what tactics this team's going to play. Once it starts, I think the excitement sort of all comes together.
Hopefully there'll be a full house for the opening game between the UAE and Bahrain. By the time you listen to this podcast, that game will probably be over. But in terms of the rest of the tournament, one of the things that and I've covered, this is my fourth Asian Cup, and particularly in the Middle East, it seems that one of the problems is getting enough spectators inside the grounds. They appear to have priced the tickets fairly competitively. The Australia-Jordan game, I think the cheapest ticket is under $5. You played in this part of the world, in Qatar, for Umm Salal. Mm. Will they turn up to watch the other games? I mean, we know they'll watch their own side, the Emirates, but what about the other teams? No. And will the other teams, particularly in the Gulf, travel?
No, look, I don't think so. I think, that they love their football in this region, but they'd rather watch it on TV, to be honest. We had, I played in the Qatar Stars League, as it was called, I think it's still called that, and you'd have the owners of the club sitting in a room inside the stadium watching the game on a TV when they could be sitting out, on their lounge chairs that they have set up in their VIP and VVIP sections.
Is that mainly because of the heat?
It is.
And obviously, it's winter here.
But obviously now, I think it's fantastic. It's great playing conditions. Maybe a little bit hot for those mid-afternoon games, the 3 o'clock ones, particularly the ones that our boys are playing in, the Socceroos. I went for a walk the other day and walked sort of in between that time just to see how hot. And yeah, at that time of day, it's warm. The 5:30 game and the 8 o'clock kickoffs, I think, will be fine. But that 3 o'clock one in particular, but it's not uncomfortable heat to sit in and watch a game. It's actually quite pleasant. They just don't have that, that desire to go out there and watch a game live. They'd rather listen to the commentary and see the replays and the rest of it. We played in Qatar in front of 150 people pretty much week in, week out, and most of those supporters were paid to be there. So, they love their football and they're all mad. Barcelona and Real Madrid, I mean, we had a game moved, a league game moved, because they scheduled at the same time as the El Clasico. So they moved our game the day before, a couple of hours. People could watch the El Clasico. So, they do love their football. They have a real passion for it. Are they supporters that, go out there and chant? Not really. In this part, in UAE, there are a few clubs that have a real passionate supporter base. And I'm guessing the Emiratis will get a strong following throughout the tournament. The Saudis, when you go and play Saudi Arabia in their country, the stadium's full. Whichever stadium you play, whether you're in Riyadh, I played in Riyadh, I played in Dammam, the stadium is full and rocking. The chants are coming out. There's drums and horns and all that type of stuff. So they are passionate. Whether the Saudis will come across the border and support their team is, I guess, we'll see as the tournament progresses. They're another one that had a fairer World Cup. I thought they were not bad. They qualified well, obviously in the group with Australia. They took our position pretty much. We had to go the other way. So they're another team that could figure in that last, four or five teams. And for them to have that support from their public, from their countrymen, that'll be great for them as well.
Be interesting to see if the crowds do turn up. Of course, there's a little bit of pressure, perhaps, in many ways on the UAE, because the words of FIFA President Gianni Infantino in the last 48 hours or so, saying that He is in favour of expanding the World Cup to 48 teams from the 2022 World Cup in neighbouring Qatar. And even the suggestion that a few games could be moved through other countries in the region, of which, of course, the UAE will be one. So we'll see if they respond to that. And let's move on to Australia. Obviously, their group kicks off on the 6th of January. If you are listening to this, it will be kickoff at 10 o'clock Eastern. That's Australian time on the 6th of January. Jordan, Palestine, Syria. Not as straightforward as perhaps a lot of people seem to think. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I agree fully. I played the, albeit 19 minutes against Jordan in Jordan, a game that we lost 2-1.
You got injured in that game.
I got injured in that. I came off, I think, in the 19th or 20th minute. That's why we lost, Simon.
Right,
no, no. No, but we've always seemed to struggle, particularly in this part of the world, against Jordan. We had them obviously in the return leg of that one, and we beat them quite comfortably in Melbourne, 4-0. But in this part of the world, we just seem to struggle against the Jordanians. Palestine's a bit of an unknown. Mm. They've got players that are playing in some of the European countries. They sort of brought a team together
from the diaspora, isn't
it? Yeah. So it's a bit of an unknown, that one. And then we have Syria, who were a couple of inches away from knocking us out of the World Cup. So it's not as straightforward as it looks on paper. You look at, I know back home we sort of look at teams such as Jordan and Syria and Palestine, and you're thinking, we should cruise through the group. But particularly in this part of the world, when we play them out here, that they seem to have that confidence. When they don't travel very, very well, the Asian teams, from what I've said.
The West Asian teams in particular.
But in this part of the world, they really seem to be a different sort of different mindset and different team. So it'll be interesting if we're not on our game, and if we underestimate them at all, it'll be very difficult to even get out of the group.
We'll talk about the Jordan team in a second, but obviously in terms of the Socceroos, Graham Arnold has had his selection problems. Everybody knows that. No Aaron Moy, no Daniel Arzani, no Martin Boyle, Matthew Leckie, a big doubt at least in the group stage. In terms of his selections, and particularly in the attacking half of the field, does he stick with the front four that started against Oman in the friendly, and that being Andrew Nabut, Robbie Cruz, Chris Economides, Awa Mabil, or does he go a different way? He's brought Apostolos Yanu, of course, into the squad, and he's got other options too.
Yeah, look, Apostolos Yanu is a bit of a different concept. He's more of a target man type, almost like a sort of Tommy Urich type of player. So he brings something different. I thought, even in that game against Oman, in that front third, we were good. We were okay. If anyone who's listening to this podcast actually watched the game, that you can see that we were gifted the goals. We did. There was some nice interplay there, and the boys were getting involved, particularly Aziz Bajic and Nabu down the left-hand side. They were causing all sorts of trouble. But in saying that, that front third is pretty much new. They haven't played together. Nabu, Economides, and Mabil, and to go into a tournament with three players that barely know each other on the pitch, I think it's a bit of a risk. So he's in a bit of a dilemma because he has lost a few players. I thought Martin Boyle would have been a definite starter. Unfortunately, we've lost him. And he's that one player that I think he had the confidence to run at defenders. Every time he gets the ball, he looks to move forward and to run at defenders. And I think he's the biggest loss in the team for me in that front third, because he brings something different. Arzani's a very similar player as well, but obviously Arzani's, he's played 15 games in the last year and a half, obviously knee injury now, but he's still a young player, so we don't know what he's going to produce for the Socceroos. Whereas with Boyle, you sort of had the idea or the impression that he could be an interesting player for us. Yeah, he could be a game changer. Just because he's always positive and always looking forward. He's like a young Robbie Cruz. And with all those outs that we have, Robbie Cruz becomes even more important to the team. But from what we've seen late, he's lost that will and that drive to run at players. He's always looking.
Or is it just confidence?
I think it is with him. I think it is with him definitely, because he's always running away from the ball. He doesn't seem to be comfortable with the ball at his feet anymore. He's not turning and running at players. You know, knocking it past them and using his speed to get around them. We're not seeing that Robbie Cruz, you know, that 2 or 3 years ago would, you know, drop his shoulder and cut inside, or we're just not seeing that from him. And his tournament, I think, will be how well he does in that front third for us will be pivotal to how far we get in this tournament.
Talking of which, of course, you would imagine, so long as his body is okay, and there's been a question mark or two against that, Tommy Rogic would probably come back in. Here's my starting 11. Let me know if you agree with this. So Matt Ryan in goal, mm-hmm. Josh Risden at right back, although I think Ryan Grant has done very well in his two internationals. Trent Sainsbury, Miloš Deganek, Aziz Bajic on the left, Mark Milligan in defensive midfield. I still think that's his best role, alongside Massimo Luongo.
Yes.
And then Tommy Rogic as the 10, Chris Economides and Robbie Cruz as the two wide players, and Andrew Nabut up top. Any variation on that for you, Sash?
That's pretty much my thinking as well there, Simon. The only difference I'd play Economides as a false nine. So I'd play him in the middle and have Nabut out left, because I thought what I saw from the boot and Bajic, there was a bit of combination there and a bit of an understanding between those two players, and particularly against Jordan in that first game. There's a player that we'll speak about a little bit later on in this podcast that will give Bajic some real work to do, and I think Naboot's power and his ability to chase back and defend as well. We saw him in that Oman game. He, you know, in the last, I think it was the 70th minute, you know, he sprinted all the way back to put in a challenge. So to have him with that combination of Bajic and the boot on the left-hand side, I think it'll be important, particularly against Jordan.
Okay, let's talk about Jordan and that man that you mentioned, Musa Al-Tamari. The right-footed winger, sorry, left-footed winger who plays on the right. He loves to cut inside, very dangerous player, plays for Apoel in Cyprus, but he's got interest from Italy, as we understand it, from Cagliari and from Fiorentina of late as well. Is he the biggest threat to Australian hopes of getting the 3 points? Are there others? And how will Jordan play?
Well, obviously there are others as well in the team, but he's the standout, and he's the one that, you know, our back half is really going to have to keep an eye on. You know, even where he's playing now, they're always involved in Champions League and Europa League. So he's playing at a very high level, and he creates for his team. As you said, he plays on the right hand side, so you know they're even more difficult to defend against, because they're always looking to cut inside and turn and have a shot on goal. So blocking his space, again with that combination of Nabut there as well, to limit his influence on the game, I think will be a major part of playing against Jordan and winning that game, or at least nullifying them in attack.
Yeah. Interesting character, Al-Tamari. He eats spinach at half time. That's his ritual.
Maybe he grew up watching Popeye.
Maybe it gives him the strength. incidentally, a little bit of late squad news on Jordan. Eason Haddad, who's their regular first choice right back, who was initially excluded from the squad due to injury, has been included at the very last minute. So he may well start on that right-hand side of the Jordanian defence. The three games for Australia They played Jordan, then of course they played Palestine, who would appear on paper at least to be the weakest team in the section. And then match day three up against Syria, who, as Sasha mentioned, gave Australia an awful lot of problems in those World Cup qualifiers. And are these days coached by the former Perth Glory man, Bernd Stanger. So that's going to be interesting. He will know plenty about the Socceroos, of course. Just looking a little bit further on into the tournament, if we may, and obviously this might be hugely presumptuous, but there is, down the line, a potential meeting with Japan in the quarterfinals, and then possibly Iran in the semi. So it's a tough route for Australia. It has been suggested, Sasha, that might be better off finishing second and going what has now become known as the England route.
We saw at the World Cup what happened to those teams that, especially through that side of the draw. To me, you want to avoid meeting them until the real pointy end. If we're lucky enough to, and we play well enough to meet Iran in the semi final, you have to beat a good team, you know, somewhere along the way to get to the final. But if we're meeting Japan in the quarters potentially, you know, it's a tough game. The Japanese are traditionally a fantastic team, and we, you know, the games are usually close. There's never a blowout against Japan, but just when you look at, if you look pound for pound, our boys against the Japanese in this little era that we're in now, the Japanese just look a bit stronger. They've got a lot of boys playing in Europe, not signed for European clubs. They're actually playing football week in, week out for European teams. So, you know, you meet a team like that in the quarters, it's going to be a hard game. But again, with that true Aussie spirit and that true Aussie grit, and I'm sure that Arnie will be pumping it into the minds of the players. Yeah, we've had a few setbacks. We were sort of the perennial underdog for a long time until we moved into Asia. And I think we're not at the top of Asia, even though we won the last Asian Cup, when our players and our team isn't at the top of Asia at the moment. So we do have a little bit of an underdog status, and I think that can work in our favour.
Going back-to-back is very difficult. Japan, the most recent team to do it. Intriguingly, the last team to win it after winning the Asian Cup as hosts was Iran, who hosted in 72 and then retained it overseas in 1976. So we'll see if Australia can brook that trend and go back-to-back. Just one more question before we finish off, Sash. The 2014 format, it's the first time that they've gone with this expanded tournament. So, of course, what happens in Europe yesterday happens in Asia today. Are you a fan of the expanded tournament? It seemed to work in the Euros because a lot of the so-called lesser teams, Iceland, Wales, did very well and gave the tournament a bit of a different flavour. We're going to see something similar maybe with the likes of India and the Philippines, Kyrgyzstan, etc.
Well, it does, because you have a look at some of the teams, some of the lesser teams in Asia, and they do play good football. We've struggled at times against Thailand, even when we did have, you know, a really strong team and a successful team. That they do play good football, and you know, they might not make the final, but they'll play entertaining football. For instance, Kyrgyz Republic against the Philippines, it might be a cracking game. It doesn't matter that it's not, you know, Japan versus Iran or South Korea versus Australia, whatever it may be. A good game of football is a good game of football. It doesn't matter who's playing it. So, they might be a bit more open. I'm sure that we'll see, you know, a lot of tactics involved in, especially with the bigger teams when they come up against each other. But, you know, when these lesser teams play against each other, it's pretty much we play our system, you play your system. It's nice and open. And usually you see a cracking game of football. So hopefully, with the inclusion of the extra teams, we do see, you know, a few more good games of football. The more goals, the merrier. For me, watching some of the Asian players and everyone, the good thing about the Asian teams or the lesser teams, they've always got one or two midfield maestros in there that can really turn it on come tournament time. So, more games. I think it's interesting. I think that some of the games that you might not think are going to be crackers will end up being probably better than the tactical struggles probably that you'll see, you know, an Iran and a Japan play. So, yeah, look, more teams, I don't see anything wrong with it.
And, of course, not just good experience for those nations, but also good exposure for some of their players. And we've seen that in the World Cup qualifiers with the likes of Kyrgyzstan. We saw Antonin Zemlyanukin, a super winger, who nobody had really ever heard of, certainly in Australia before, but we will find some new stars at this Asian Cup. I think of that there is no doubt. So that's about us for this mini podcast from the UAE. It all kicks off on January the 5th with the UAE against Bahrain from the Zayed Sports City Stadium, or 3 a.m. Eastern Australia. That's on the morning of the 6th. Then, of course, it's the big one for the Socceroos. They play Jordan from Al Ain. That's at 10 p.m. Eastern on the 6th. Australian time, with Syria and Palestine, the other game in the group, to follow on the back of that. All the games, of course, live and exclusive on Fox Sports. We've got dedicated teams both here in the UAE and back in Australia. You can keep up to date with all the latest news on Fox Sports News, Channel 501, and of course the foxsports.com.au/football website. Enjoy the Asian Cup. Thanks very much, Sasha.
Thank you, Simon.
Looking forward to commentating with you, and let's see if the Socceroos can go back to back. Bye for now. We'll